Movies, music, art, ideas. It's time for the 5th annual Free State Festival. I'm Kay McIntyre, and today on KPR Presents, we'll preview the Free State Festival, which kicks off tomorrow, Monday, June 20th, here in Lawrence. The festival is the brainchild of Marlo Angel, who joins us in the KPR studios. She's one of the artistic directors of the Free State Festival. Always nice to see you, Marlo.
Thank you, Kay. It's always great to see you as well.
Remind us how the festival got its start.
Sure. The festival got its start 5 years ago. I presented a five-year plan to Susan Tate, the executive director of the Art Center, and Rick Averill, the performing arts director of the Art Center. And as a filmmaker myself who traveled the country with my films, I always would come back home to Lawrence and feel like this community needed a festival. What's really wonderful about a festival is that you explore the community, the shops, the restaurants, the venues. And Lawrence is really unique because it's situated all downtown. All the venues are walkable. I always think with a festival, if you have to drive somewhere, a little bit of the energy drains. And there's something about wearing your badge, interacting with the other festival goers that makes you feel like you're part of this festival community and you're part of the city that you're visiting. So I really wanted to create that environment here in Lawrence and celebrate all the wonderful places that we have and the working artists. I think what's unique about Lawrence is we have such a population of live music, visual art, and such a strong and central film community that's very intersected and supportive of one another, that it's just like a place where all the visiting filmmakers that come here, they immediately feel like they're at home here. So I presented this five-year plan to Susan and Rick, and they immediately jumped on board, and they wanted to embrace it and make it an art center event, which I thought was absolutely wonderful because, to me, the art center has those interdisciplinary arts and elements already ingrained in it, so it's a perfect springboard to get the other partners and community members involved. So what I'm really excited about, this is our fifth year, so I created that five-year plan, and I recently revisited it before we started planning for year five, and really everything that was bullet pointed came to fruition. So it started with its core with films, with independent films, and then slowly I wanted to integrate the music, which we did right away. We showed some select documentaries that had music performances with them. So that was an easy connection to make, and it was easy to make happen on a small scale in the first year or two. Then as we grew, it became on a larger scale. And really that National Endowment for the Arts grant that we were able to get really made that possible, because before we'd have our onstage concerts, but with that grant, we were able to do a large-scale outdoor concert where the entire community was invited because it was completely free, just a way for everybody to get together and celebrate together and interact as a joyful community. So that was really wonderful. And then we integrated the ideas part of it. So really opening up discussion. It's always been super important to me to talk about films afterwards. Like, I think if we just see a film, we walk out of the theater and go home, we might as well just sat down and watch it on Netflix on our couch. I want to really to get people involved in engaging with one another, whether it's visiting filmmakers, whether it's community panels with our local scholars in the community. And I think Sarah Bishop has done a wonderful job of translating that outside of film. So we have a lot of independent panels that are on subject matter. Some of it's connected to film, some of it's not. It's just independent. But just a way for people to get discussion going. Because I think the more that we can talk about issues with one another and explore different viewpoints, the stronger we are as a community, the more we can grow, really.
And we'll hear from Sarah Bishop later this hour about some of those panels and ways that the festival goes beyond just films. But because you're involved with the film portion of that, let's concentrate on that for a minute. Sure. You've got how many films at the festival this year?
We have 13 feature films, and we also have about 30 short films. And the short films range from narrative short films. We have two short film showcases, which are basically groupings. I try to somewhat thematically connect them. And then we also have an experimental film showcase, which I've done every year, which I absolutely love. Sometimes experimental films can fall through the cracks. It's hard to find a good space for them to be viewed as a whole. Like if you put a grouping of experimental films, they really run the gamut. So it's hard to create like a sit-down theater experience where you'd enjoy a group of experimental films. So what I like to do is show them on a loop. So we have this gorgeous LED screen in our lobby at the Art Center. So I've been showing them throughout the festival on a loop for the past few years, and it's worked out really wonderfully. So in addition to that, then I have my 13 feature films, which some of them are local this year, and I'm really excited about the combination of local films that we have, because that's really important to me, to celebrate our local filmmaking community. And then also just a really strong selection of festival films from outside the region that I've kind of curated, and some were just open calls through our submission process. So having that juxtaposition of the local films, the national films, the shorts, and the experimental films, I think it's a really engaging and fun lineup this year.
So let's talk about a couple of those films. Sure. Marlo, what have we got first on our lineup?
Great. We have a wonderful section between documentaries and narrative films. One of the documentaries that I'm really excited to show here in Lawrence is called Uncle Howard. This film is based on Howard Brookner, who was a filmmaker who did the Burroughs movie. And he was pretty amazing. He was kind of in the 80s independent film scene, and he ended up working with one of my favorite filmmakers, Jim Jarmusch. And he was really in this kind of underground gay community scene in the 80s in New York. And so this film does a wonderful job of uncovering a lot of the footage that he had for some of his documentaries and his real independent work. The film was made by Aaron Brookner, his nephew, who's also a filmmaker. And he's been to Lawrence. He did a lot of filming around side the Burroughs home and some interviews with some local people that are very tied to the Burroughs community. And he does a wonderful job of making it elegiac, and he's very proud of his uncle. But then what I enjoyed about the film, it wasn't this complete like home movie reverent film. It was also like there was a little bit of distance that he was able to provide. And I really love the tone and the way he reveals information in the archival footage. One of my favorite moments is when he goes to the bunker with Jim Jarmusch. He takes Jim Jarmusch with him. There was a photographer who had a lot of Burroughs materials and this archival footage up in his old bunker in New York. And they finally, you get to see through the film, they get permission to go to this bunker. And I have a clip that shows this scene. So it's really a wonderful, powerful moment in the film.
Let's hear that clip.
I definitely don't recall William having a bicycle. You can't carry as many weapons as you can just keep walking.
How'd that be?
William? Howard? They're gone.
Yeah.
Oh, man. The bunker.
So this was the moment when they are going up into the bunker, and it's really beautiful because you can be able to see the space and then see Jim Jarmusch and Aaron Brookner and their experience viewing that. And just that the emotions that are involved. Howard Brookner, it's really sad, when his career was going to take off to another level. He was really strong in the independent film scene, doing his documentaries, and he was just about to catapult into more of a mainstream cinema. He had a big budget film that he was going to do, and then he ended up passing away from AIDS, like shortly after it was filmed, then it ended up being kind of cobbled together and not put out the way that he would have intended. So it's a story of loss as well, because, you know, during that time period, we lost a lot of great talent. And so this film, I think, does a really wonderful job of capturing this artist in particular and also making a larger statement of the time that it was from.
Another film.
Yes. Another film that we have that I'm really proud of, it's called The Fits. This film won the Next Award at Sundance, and the next category at Sundance, it's for really independent films. Sundance, as it goes along, becomes a little bit more corporate every year, so it's a lot of times you'll find that the films already have distribution when they go to festivals. Sundance used to be a place where you'd go to get a distributor when you'd have your independent film, so I really admire that they created this category called Next. So it's really these up-and-coming, what we traditionally think of independent films, that don't have stars, don't have named directors, they're just people out making their films on micro budgets and doing it the way independent films should be. So this film won the award for the Next Award, and I was really excited that we were able to get it. It's called The Fitz. It's about this young tomboy. She's in an African-American community. A lot of it is shot like in a kind of a recreational center. She's a boxer, and she trains with her brother. And she starts to get into, she's kind of on that pubescent stage, we're starting to get into more womanhood, you know, different, there's like a female drill team, a dance drill team that she starts to get involved with. So you see the comparison between her kind of really strong athletic work that she does as a boxer, and then this more female-oriented feminine stuff. Yeah, she's getting opened into this. And you see the changes that she's going through, and it's done in this really beautiful artistic way. And then kind of throughout the film, what starts to happen in this drill team, some of the girls start to pass out with these fainting spells. So it starts to take over this drill team, and the film does a really beautiful job of kind of using that as sort of a metaphor for the change into adulthood. And I always think it's kind of an interesting comparison to some like female hysteria that we've heard from time to time, whether it's the Salem witch trials. There's also the incident where this hysterical laughter was overtaking a community. One of our guests, Jad Abumrad, who's coming, he's a podcaster from one of my favorite podcasts called Radiolab, and he did an amazing podcast episode about that incident. So it's these wonderful comparisons and a way to use emotional experience and translate it into a physical way. There's also some interesting allusions to the Flint water crisis, because, you know, there's kind of a speculation that this could be due to contaminated water, but it's not directly stated in any way. But I do have a clip of this film, too, between the main character. And this actress is absolutely amazing. Her name is Royalty Hightower. And I think even her name, you know, shows that she's really going to be a star. It's a powerful performance. I think she was 12 when she made the film. And to be able to capture that kind of emotion and naturalism with this camera so intensely upon you, is pretty intense. It's pretty a beautiful thing to witness. So this scene is with her and her brother when they're training for boxing.
Trying to break your wrist?
What do you care?
Dang, dancing must really got you weak. Dang. Hold up. Come on now, Tom. What's wrong?
I'm scared.
Scared? Scared of what? It's all in your mind. Trust me, they're going to get better.
What I really love about these kind of moments in film, and I think this film in particular, it really makes you feel like you're with these characters. There's nothing Hollywood about this film. There's nothing where you feel like things are constructed in a way. Like sometimes with certain films, you can feel the writing. Okay, I'm going to this plot point. I'm going to plot point B. Now we're moving on to the third act. In this film, you really feel like you're a part of it. And I think that scene really translates that well, with the acting, the cinematography, the way the director was able to kind of, the camera hovers around Royalty Hightower, the actress, and you feel like you're going on this journey with her. And it's absolutely beautiful. The sound design elements, the editing, it's a gorgeous film. And I'm really proud of that film. It'll be shown on Saturday at 12:45 on the 25th of June.
Marlo, the past couple years, there's been a lot of controversy in the film industry about the lack of diversity. We saw that at the last two Academy Awards with the whole Oscars So White and Oscars Still So White hashtags. What role do independent films and film festivals like this one, what role do they play in addressing some of those diversity issues?
I think that's an excellent question. What's wonderful to me, like diversity is very important to me, whether it's racial or gender or just different cultures or anything like that. It's really important to me to present those stories. But what makes my job really easy, the independent film community does that already. I think Hollywood is a completely different animal. You know, like there's different processes that are involved. The films that you see at independent film festivals come from the heart. So it's these filmmakers getting it together, telling the stories they want to tell. So I never have an issue saying like, I need to find a diverse film, or I need to find a film directed by a woman. That stuff happens naturally. So it's never anything that I go and I plan out, okay, we need to fill this little slot. It never happens that way. It's always like choosing the best film, and naturally, organically, it's a diverse lineup. And it's just really fun this year programmatically because in addition to The Fitz, which has a very strong African-American cast in it, right afterwards is Morris from America, which is a very similar coming of age, you know, landscape, completely different film. This one is more, it's about a 13-year-old African-American boy who moves to Germany. And it's about him being out of place in many ways, being there, and then having to find himself. And that one is just absolutely wonderful. But just the connection between The Fitz and Morris from America was something that I did choreograph in terms of the schedule, but not something I went out and programmed because I was looking for diversity. But I think it is so important. I think that's why we need independent film festivals. If we just rely on Hollywood, we're not always getting the right stories. And it always, you know, hurts my heart when I see especially a role that was designed for a certain ethnicity and it's pigeonholed, you know, I think Scarlett Johansson, like there's that anime character, Ghost in the Shell, and they cast her in that. And I'm like, oh, that just feels so wrong. And we just don't have those issues in independent film. So that's why I think it's really important that each community has an independent film festival.
A third film.
This film, I'm really excited, and I know this is going to be a wonderful hit here in Lawrence. It's called Nuts. This is a documentary. It's directed by Penny Lane, a wonderful filmmaker who did a film based on Nixon's old home movies, which is absolutely wonderful. This film that she did called Nuts, it's based on Dr. John Romulus Brinkley. He's a notorious Kansan.
Oh, of course. Dr. Brinkley, the goat gland doctor.
The goat gland doctor. So this film, it's so fascinating. It uses animation to tell his story. So in case anyone is not familiar with Dr. John Brinkley, he was kind of a snake oil salesman, and he designed a way to cure male impotence by taking goat gland testicles and adhesing them to males that couldn't have children.
Perhaps we should put air quotes under that cure.
Yes, I do that sometimes. So it's so fascinating because it's using this animation in such a playful and interesting way. The director, she spent 8 years making this film and uncovered some great archival photographs that she was able to assemble. And using the animation, it really makes it come to life. So in addition to his goat testicle cure, which we'll air quote again, he also designed this huge radio tower. So it kind of goes into that dynamics. And then it goes on his battle where he actually sued the medical association because they were coming after him and trying to discredit him because he wasn't a traditional medicine practicer. But it's just the way the story unfolds with the trial. It is absolutely wonderful. I'm super excited about this film, and I'm glad to show you a clip.
Just a few days after they arrived, a farmer named Stitsworth visited Brinkley's store.
How do you do?
Well, I'm all in, Doc. I'm a flat tire.
Flat tire? What does that mean?
Well, for 16 years, I've been trying to have a child with my wife.
Well, I can't help you. Modern medical science has not yet solved the problems of sexual weakness and childless homes.
I see. That fella out there sure is something.
Something? Yes.
It's too bad I don't have Billy Goat Nuts.
Too bad.
Say, Doc, why don't you just put some in me?
Beg your pardon?
Put some goat nuts in me. You know, graft them on.
To cure your impotence, you want me to implant goat testicles into you.
Well, Doc, they can't be worse than the nuts I got.
Well, there'll be a small fee.
This was like some of the opening. This clip was from the very beginning of the film. And I think you can really get a sense of the director's humor and the spirit of the film. It is nonstop entertaining. I think sometimes people think of documentaries like, oh, okay, I'm going to be given a lot of information in a very dry way, like I'm sitting with a 16-millimeter film in my classroom. No, this film is nonstop entertainment and engaging. And it is educational because you're getting this historical information. And it's a Kansas story that I think needs to be heard.
Marlo, you started out saying that you started the festival with this 5-year plan, and you're now in the 5th year of the festival. What's ahead for the Free State Festival?
That's a great question. I think the next step is maybe to make a new five-year plan. I think it's really what I've loved to see about the festival and where I'd like to see this grow is that the community has really come on board the last couple years. Organizations like the Public Library, the Lawrence Public Library, have stepped up and created their own programming. So I think we had such a wonderful event last year with John Ronson. The library brought in and we showed a film this year.
Very funny.
Such a great Very film. Funny. Yeah, but he's fantastic as a speaker. And that, I don't know if you saw Frank, but I love that movie. And it's like one of those I could watch over and over again. And just to have him there to talk about it, because it was a real life story that he based it on, you know, you cannot put a price tag on that. That's just an invaluable experience. So the library this year is bringing in Thomas Frank as kind of a pre-festival event. Last year, the Spencer Museum brought a prominent artist, and he did an exhibit called New Penny. And it was so wonderful because it was one of the highlights of the festival, the different pictures that people would post on social media of not only the artist, but of his work, which is at a separate location, and just finding it. Oh, it's just invaluable. So that's the kind of thing that I would like to see grow, is that different communities really take ownership of different events, and it makes the whole festival bigger by doing that. I think what's really been a great success for us is the combination of film and music. So that's something we will definitely keep. This year we have American Epic, and that's a wonderful documentary. It's shown at very select film festivals, and it just happened to approve us as one of its Midwest premieres. So we're super excited. It's about early recording. It's back like in the 20s when recording studios would go out into communities that weren't, you know, like traditional touring musicians, but they went out with their recording devices and they recorded like the heart and soul of blues, R&B, country, roots music, and it really formed the basis of what we think of as American music. So this documentary has amazing archival footage of this and the audio recordings, and it was executive produced by Jack White and Robert Redford and T-Bone Burnett. So I think, and we're having that outdoor concert that comes right after it with some of the performers in it, and I think having those natural organic connections, it'll only flourish. And I think having Ben Elvers here has done an amazing job with the art component. Being a visual artist himself, he's able to curate some amazing art pieces that expand upon the core of the Free State Festival and make it bigger and embrace what we have here in Lawrence. And so the things like that, I hope to see grow and grow.
One of the headliner events for the Free State Festival is Maria Bamford. Tell me about that event.
I'm so excited. One of my favorite things with the festival is the comedians that we bring in every year. What I love about that is that we don't just bring a comedian here and have them perform and then get off the stage and then you never see them again. It's not like your traditional club comedy experience. It's something completely unique. So Maria Bamford will be coming here with her new Netflix series, Lady Dynamite, and show an episode of that. And that series is absolutely incredible. It's based on her nervous breakdown. It's semi-autobiographical in tone. It's about some of the creators of Arrested Development, which is a TV show that I absolutely adore. And Maria herself is really funny, and she's able to kind of convey this sort of tragic thing that happened to her in a hilarious way. And it makes it very relatable. Like, you feel that you're right there with her in the different psychological moments. It jumps from past to present in a very self-reflexive and meta way. And she takes the viewers on that journey. So to have her talk about that in an intimate theater setting is going to be wonderful. And we've done that the past few years with Tig Notaro and Marc Maron. And I think those experiences you can't find anywhere except for the Free State Festival.
One last event I want to highlight before you go is Jad Abumrad.
Yes. Oh, one of my favorites, for sure. It's so funny. The minute that we finished the Free State Festival in 2015, the first question is, who are we going to get next year? And Jad was one of the first people on my list. Because what I love about Jad, in addition, I'm just a huge Radiolab fan. That's such an amazing podcast that deals with art and science and the meaning of life in such a beautiful sonic way. Like, he used the way that Jad and his co-creator Robert Krulwich intertwine sound effects and music and interviews, it's like nothing I've experienced before. And what I think a lot of that comes from Jad's background. He started as a film composer. So what I always look for in my guests is some kind of interdisciplinary art. Like, you know, is this guest somebody that crosses over between film and art and ideas? Like, what's the intersection with this artist? Like, kind of Renaissance man is what we're looking for. So I thought Jad was absolutely wonderful because he has that film background. He has the sound. He has the journalism. He has the storytelling. And he just has this great way of revealing information in this artistic way with sound. And I thought that would be such a great addition to our festival, something we haven't explored before. He's going to do a multimedia sort of TED Talk style presentation called Gut Churn. And I'm so excited about this because it really deals with the creative process. And in our Lawrence community, so many of us are working in artistic professions or have artistic hobbies or just looking for inspiration. And I think this talk is really going to inspire us as a community together. Chad Abumrad won the MacArthur Genius Award a few years ago. And after that, he was sort of kind of laid out with a blank slate, like, what do I do next? And I think we've all been there. And so he talks about the unknown and the unexpected that comes with creativity and how sometimes that's scary, but you have to embrace it. And I think this talk will be an amazing opportunity for Lawrence, all of our community members to get together and be engaged, inspired, because I think this is a topic that is really close to the heart for all of us. So I'm very excited. That one's on June 25th at 7 o'clock.
Marlo, sounds like you've got a great lineup. We'll see you at the festival.
Thank you, Kay. It's always great to talk to you.
Again, Lawrence's Free State Festival kicks off tomorrow. It's 6 days of independent film, music, art, and ideas. You can find a complete festival schedule online at freestatefestival.org. You're listening to KPR Presents on Kansas Public Radio. I'm Kay McIntyre, and today on KPR Presents, we're getting a sneak peek at the Free State Festival. It's 6 days of film, music, art, and ideas, and it all starts tomorrow here in Lawrence. One of the many films that will be featured at this year's festival is Chirac by Lawrence filmmaker Kevin Wilmot and directed by Spike Lee. I visited with Kevin Wilmot earlier this year. Let's start not in 21st century Chicago, but in Greece, around the year 400 BC. The Peloponnesian War has been raging for decades with no end in sight. Enter Lysistrata.
Yeah, she is upset with this whole insane war thing, and she decides to put on a sex strike to get the attention of the men, the warrior society, and she shuts it down. She shuts it down. Aristophanes comes in and he writes the beautiful play about, you know, the insanity of war and how women especially kind of have to bring men to their senses.
Take that story and translate it to modern day Chicago. What does Lysistrata have to say to us today about violence?
Well, I think you know, it's the same thing. I mean, it's always been the same problem. I mean, men love war, and we sell it to women, but I think men love war, and that's kind of the problem in the country, really. But now Chicago's become the poster child to gun violence specifically and the war attitude. And so, you know, Chirac is about Lysistrata, you know, a young girl from the South Side who decides that she's sick of all this gun violence after she sees the murder of a child, which happens all the time in major cities. Every day there's somebody being shot like that now. And she's sick of it, and she organizes a sex strike to try to bring peace.
Chirac is maybe surprisingly, you know, it deals with a very tragic subject, but it's also very funny.
Yeah, that's the whole thing with satire and with the films I like to make. Is that you know, it doesn't have to be a funeral. It doesn't have to feel like a funeral for us to learn the lessons of bad things in society. You know, it doesn't have to feel that way. There are very, very dramatic moments in the film Chirac and very sad moments. We're not making fun of anybody, maybe gang members a little bit, but we are trying to satirize the insanity of gun violence in the country and gang violence. And when you satirize something, you kind of expose it for its absurdity. And when you expose something for its absurdity, you tend to laugh at it. And that's that's the whole point, really, is that, you know, these this part of American life is insane and it's absurd, and we have to reveal it for what it is. And kind of when we do that, we often have to laugh at it some.
Tell me about the reaction that you've had from Chirac.
Well, you know, around the country, people have really, really loved the film. And Chicago has a tough time with the film, I think. And I think one part of it was that I think they thought the film was going to be like a an 80s gang movie, you know, like a Boys in the Hood kind of film, where it was going to be, you know, about the nitty-gritty reality of gang violence and a lot of shooting and death and crying and so forth. And the movie's not that at all. And I'm really glad the movie is not that. And because I think there's a certain romanticism that goes along with that. And especially guys who are involved in that world love to think that their behavior should be kind of remembered and romanticized and kind of, you know, honored in some kind of way. And it should not. And the movie does not at all do that. The movie's about the solution. It's not about the problem. See, I think we know what the problem is in American life. I mean, most of the problems we have in American life, we know what the problem is. The problem is we can't get to the solutions to the problem. And so that's what the film is really kind of dealing with, is it really shows Lysistrata and her army of nonviolent women who try to bring sense back to an insane community and an insane country and world. And so I'm really pleased that the movie's about the solution.
Tell me about the name of your film, Chirac. How did you come up with that?
Well, we didn't come up with it. It was Chicago rappers gave it that term. And that's a term that's been in Chicago for quite a while. And it's because more people have died in Chicago than in Iraq and Afghanistan combined. More people have died from gun violence there. And, you know, when we were there shooting the pre-production of the film, one of the former gang members who were working on the film with us, his brother was killed. Spike had to pay for the funeral. You know, it's just insane. I could go on and on and on about the horror stories we heard while shooting there. You know, it's a wake-up call. You know, one of the first things you see in the film is this is an emergency. And it is an emergency. And unfortunately, Americans have become numb to all of this, you know. And we have to kind of continually try to wake people up and try to show them that this is an emergency and it needs urgent attention.
Kevin, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
We have a clip from Kevin Wilmot's film, Chirac. This from the scene where Lysistrata is meeting with other women to convince them to band together to fight gang violence.
I'm down for the cause, but how?
We force our men to negotiate peace by exercising cocksure self-control and total abstinence from knocking the boots.
Oh! Man, you really think something like that could bring peace?
Y'all know the power we have over them withholding just a day. A week.
Ooh.
Imagine a month. A year. Oh, they gonna bring the peace.
Suppose that the men just dump us.
If we all hold out, who can they go to?
The boss.
Them hoes over there.
Well, we will enlist them too. If we want our men alive, we want our babies to thrive, we gonna have to organize.
Repeat after me. I will deny all rights of access or entrance.
I will deny all rights of access or entrance.
From every husband, lover, or male acquaintance.
From every husband, lover, or male acquaintance.
Who comes to my direction in erection.
Again, that's a clip from Kevin Wilmot's film, Chirac. Chirac will be featured at the Free State Festival on Tuesday, June 21st at the Lawrence Arts Center main stage. You can find a complete schedule of events for the Free State Festival online at freestatefestival.org. The festival kicks off tomorrow, Monday, June 20th, in downtown Lawrence. Ben Alvers is one of the artistic directors of the Free State Festival. Always nice to see you, Ben.
It's good to be here.
We've heard from Marlo Angel about some of the films that will be featured this week. Tell me about your portion of the festival.
Well, my portion of the Free State Festival has a lot to do with the art component that will be a part of the festival, and that's evolved in a number of ways over the last few years. This year, we've got some really, really neat projects that that I think the audience will really enjoy. It's participatory, some of it. We have a project called Cloud that's coming in. It's a collaboration between an artist named Caitlin Brown and Wayne Garrett, and they're coming in from Calgary with this piece. And this piece was, I've been trying to get it for about 3 years, and our schedules have never synced up. And so that piece, it'll open Monday night, the first night of the festival tomorrow. They're giving a talk in the gallery, and they're going to talk about their work and practice and different projects that they've done. But it will culminate with sort of the opening of the piece. The piece will be right in front of the art center outside on the street. It's interactive. It's basically a 20-foot cloud made up of about 6,000 light bulbs.
Wow.
With pull strings that, I don't know how many pull strings, dozens of them that, you know, the pull chains that you used to have on, may still have, on lights. And the effect is really beautiful. It is sort of a iconic or universal image of a cloud, right? They're everywhere around the world that we all can identify that image. But the different vantage points to see the piece or experience the piece, from right underneath it to right in front of it to inside the building, outside, from the parking garage that's across the street, and that was one of the reasons we decided to put it in that particular spot. So anyway, I'm excited to have them here, and it's been great working with them so far, and I'm looking forward to hear what projects they're working on now, because they're really, they work all over the place. They've been in Israel and Portugal and France and many different parts of the U.S., all over the world, and I think they're really, I really enjoy their ideas and their execution. So that's one big piece. I also work with an artist named Luc Dubois, who's been to Lawrence a few times, and he is sort of
the name.
Adopted artist in Lawrence, and I think he's a genius, and if you've not looked at his work, you need to look at his work on his website. But he's going to be giving a talk about his work. Even if you have no clue what we're referencing here on the radio, must see. That's how I first was introduced to Luke. I went to a talk. KU brought him in as a visiting artist, and I went to go see it. And I'd never seen anything like that in my life, and I told him that. And we've worked on a number of projects since that time, and that's been about 4 or 5 years ago. So he'll be here. He's going to be recording. He's going to be making an album in the Lawrence Public Library in the Sound and Vision Studio down there. And, the library is a great partner with the Art Center, among many other entities in town, but they've got that really terrific studio down there. And so he's going to be making a record on the synth that they just received earlier this year that is really unique. And he's going to be making a record down there. He's also going to be giving a talk throughout the week, or at one point during the week. And there are a couple of other talks throughout the week at the Free State Festival, and then the other part of the festival that I work on is the music portion of that, and I do collaborate a lot with Marlo on that. And you know, our idea with music is it really is anchored in the films, and she is the curator with the films that come to the festival. We also recognize that Lawrence is a very music oriented town and really supports music, and so it seems like a real natural fit. So there's often been a real emphasis on music and musicians, and so this year is no exception with that. So there are many really great shows that are lined up. Some are free and some are ticketed, but I think it's reflective of the diversity of programming that the Art Center does throughout a year, but also the festival itself. You know, the big shows would be, you know, Kris Kristofferson. I think he's one of the icons in American music, and I think it's a real honor to have him here playing in a space like Liberty Hall, with maybe a few surprises, but he's the real deal, and so I'm really, really looking forward to having him and Lawrence and having him as a part of the festival. I think J.D. McPherson, who's performing on Thursday night of the festival at Liberty Hall again, somebody who's really, you know, influenced by early rock and roll and Little Richard and Chuck Berry, but puts sort of a rock and roll edge to it. He's incredible. He's really great, and I think he's a bit unknown. I think it's definitely worth the ticket price. I'm looking forward to seeing him perform Thursday night at Liberty Hall, and then Friday night, American Epic. I'm sure Marlo has talked about American Epic, the film that is a documentary about early American recordings, music recordings, and this machine that was created that, you know, would record and make the record right there on the spot. You know, and that the sort of equalizing power of that machine, where it would go around to different communities, and whatever music in the early 1900s that was sort of specific to that place would be recorded. So, you know, class, ethnicity, social stuff, all that stuff was sort of didn't matter. They were just going to be, you know, the people who invented this machine. Anyway, it's this incredible story about a machine that really is an important part of our history. It allowed us to have those recordings that we still have. Anyway, so it's a documentary about that, and it's going to air on PBS, I think, sometime later this year. But the filmmakers will be here as a part of that. The producers Robert Redford and T-Bone Burnett and Jack White created sort of sessions. So they had contemporary musicians come in and use this machine. So it's recording live. And the Americans, which is a band out of California, they're going to be performing. They're in the film and they're a big part of the film. They'll be performing at the Free State Festival for free out on the street with a bunch of other bands from the area. 40 Watt Dreams, which is a local band, terrific. Arthur Dodge is going to perform. Katie Gillian and the Girls, Sun Venezuela. It's quite a range, and Marlo and I, our approach was, you know, to the diversity of music that's in American Epic, which I think is really special. It's done really well. We wanted to kind of riff off of that out on the street that the public we'll have access to, you know, pretty much from 5 p.m. until we're done on Friday night. And then the big ending is Saturday of the festival with Public Enemy performing. And again, there's some local acts that are really strong. And it's really important from my perspective to allow or to have opportunities where artists can get together and either perform on the same stage or collaborate or interact in some way. We've done this a few years now, and I've seen it happen, and very unique things happen when these people get together that is not anything that I could script or prescribe. I've seen it, and I have no doubt that kind of stuff will happen again, that can happen in a very public way. Or, you know, in the past we've had people who have met here, maybe didn't perform together, but they ended up collaborating, you know, on a project somewhere else, you know, down the line. We've had that happen numerous times. And I think that's great, because, you know, then this project sort of has, you know, life that lives beyond the 5 days that we have here in Lawrence. So, you know, you can't force those things, but I think that's really cool when those sorts of things can happen.
Ben, we'll see you at the festival.
I'll be there.
I'm Kay McIntyre. You're listening to KPR Presents on Kansas Public Radio. If you're just joining us, Lawrence's Free State Festival kicks off tomorrow. It's 6 days of independent film, music, art, and ideas. many of which take place at the Lawrence Arts Center, but much of the festival is scattered throughout Lawrence. You can find a complete festival schedule online at freestatefestival.org. Sarah Bishop is director of the Free State Festival. So far, we've heard from Marlo Angel about some of the films we'll be featuring at the festival. We've heard from Ben Alvers about art and music. Sarah, what else is going on this week at the festival?
Thank you so much, Kay. Well, so I, in addition to being the festival director and just helping keep everyone together, I am also the ideas curator of the festival. So I run all the ideas programming, and there is a lot of great programming this year. So Monday of the festival, June 20th, we'll be having two panels on Langston Hughes. Lawrence is, of course, the hometown of poet Langston Hughes, and we received a grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities to bring some of the world's most well-known Langston Hughes scholars to Lawrence for a couple of days at the start of the festival. So we have Arnold Rampersad from Stanford University, Wallace Best from Princeton, and a number of other fantastic scholars who will be giving two panels, one starting at 6 and one starting at 7:30. These are totally free, and these should be very interactive panels that really engage the community in discussion about what Langston Hughes means to Lawrence. On Tuesday, we have an exciting event called Speed Dating Researchers. We had this last year, but it's back. It's sold out. And so we're so glad to have it again. We'll have 6 scholars from KU. They range the gamut from people who are talking about neurobiology and psychology to literature and theater scholars, all kinds of fantastic people. And this is a $20 ticket. This starts at 4:30 at the Cider Gallery. And you get to come in, get a little nibble, have a cocktail, and then move around from table to table, talking to the scholars and sort of interviewing them. So it's really fun. It's a really great way to get to know a little bit about all of the fantastic research that's going on at KU. On Wednesday, we have a free panel called The Art of Activism. So this is a major theme of the festival this year is art and activism and how art can really push forward social justice issues. So this is a free panel. It should be really fantastic. We'll have 4 wonderful panelists, and it's, again, going to be very engaging. We're hoping to get a lot of great conversation going with the audience. Thursday, we're working with the Spencer to have an event called Art History on the Rocks. This is with art historian Maria Buschek. Come in. She's going to be talking about pop music. There will be a DJ. This is also an event where you get a cocktail and some bites. The ticket is $20, and we expect this one to sell out. So get it now. Friday, we've got a bunch of panels on water. So we have a panel called Waterwise that's starting in the afternoon, and that will be talking about ways that you can help to conserve water in Kansas and also some of the issues related to water conservation and water sustainability within the region. And that's followed by a panel called Wet, The Aesthetics of Water Conservation, which is thinking a lot about how artists are using their work to help promote water sustainability and water conservation. We have on Saturday an array of ideas programming events. So starting at 10 in the morning, we have a Kaw River family cleanup. So this is being led by Dawn Bueller, who is the river keeper with Friends of the Kaw. And she'll be taking families along the banks of the Kaw to help clean up a little bit. This is, again, within the theme of water sustainability. That is followed by a bunch of fun family activities on the street from 12 to 3. This will be outside Lawrence Arts Center, so on New Hampshire between 9th and 10th. We'll have so much going on. We have the Topeka Drum Line coming in from 12 to 1. We have our performing arts departments doing a bunch of different productions from about 1 to 2. And then from 2 to 3, there will just be ongoing activities, including a really fun event called Gyotaku, which is the art of fish printing. So that we're really excited. This one, we're partnering with the KU Institute of Biodiversity and Natural History, and they will be bringing actual dead fish that are pickled, and you paint the fish with a little bit of paint, and then you print them.
Oh.
It's actually really beautiful. It sounds gross, Kay, but don't worry. It's actually really, they have really gorgeous prints. And if you're too squeamish, there will also be rubber fish. So we have both options. If you can't handle the dead fish, you can just go rubber. But that should be great. We'll have a teepee provided by Haskell University in our green space that you can come inside. And we'll be doing face painting and other artistic activities within the teepee. So we're really excited about that. And then there will be, I think we're going to have a table about creating art out of discarded objects. Again, thinking about sustainability. So just so much fun will be on the street. There will also be food trucks and bars will be open. So, you know, come on out, bring the kids, and it's just going to be a fantastic afternoon. At the same time, from 1 to 4, we have our annual Free State Frolic, which is our scavenger hunt that we have every year. And we're so excited to be partnering with Breakout Lawrence this year. So first prize is a Breakout Lawrence experience. Yeah, it's super fun. So we're really, really excited about that. There's an adult version of the scavenger hunt that's kind of more challenging, and that's the one that would win the Breakout Lawrence experience. But we also have a kid version that will be within the Watkins, and we're so thankful to the Watkins History Museum for providing that scavenger hunt. We also have, from 1 to 4 at the very same time, we have the lightning round. It's back. It's better than ever. It's 3 hours of rapid-fire 8-minute presentations. Anybody can participate. We are still taking people up to the very last minute, so send me your information.
Tell me, what is the lightning round?
Yes. So the lightning round, it's 3 hours of rapid fire presentations that are 8 minutes each. And anybody can say anything. So as long as you're not being profane or obscene, we will take you. We've had people do things from the history of the tutu to doing pie crust demos to dance performances. This year, we already have someone who's going to come and talk about the idea that time travel is real.
All you Doctor Who fans.
I know.
Make sure to come.
We're going to have a cello performance. We're going to have a skit that's being done. I think we're going to have potentially a surprise haircut being done. So it's all kinds of crazy things that people in Lawrence are doing. And it's really a chance for Lawrence residents to come out and show their true colors and their true passions and share them with the community.
You had me at dead fish painting.
Yeah, you like that one. It's who doesn't? Who doesn't like dead fish painting?
There's so much to do and see at the festival. And if you look at that schedule, it can look a little overwhelming.
Yeah.
Do you have any tips or suggestions for festival goers on how to pick what sounds good and how not to wear yourself out over the course of the week?
Well, I would say that, you know, it's hard. It's really hard to make the choices because all of the programming is so good and so fun. And we do try to pack it really tight because we feel like one of the fun things about festival is just the richness of activity that's here in Lawrence. And we really want to showcase the wonderful cultural and artistic resources that we have here. But it is really hard to pick, and we sympathize with that. Of course, the schedule can be found on the website at freestatefestival.org, and it's mobily optimized for your phone, so that helps if you're on the go. And then our printed programs, will be out June 15th. So you can pick those up, and those all have a nice fold-out schedule that you can use. In addition, the Lawrence Journal World is one of our partners, and they are giving us the Spadia starting the week of the festival. So the Spadia is that part of the paper that folds out, kind of covers half the front page, and then it's the whole back page.
I didn't know there was a word for that.
It's beautiful, and we're so excited that they gave it to us because it's really a lot of real estate in the paper. It was very generous, but that will have the schedule printed on it. So if you pick up your LJW paper on Sunday or Monday, you can see the schedule there.
Sarah Bishop is director of the Free State Festival. Thank you so much for coming in today, Sarah.
Oh, thank you so much, Kate. It was really fun.
Have a great festival.
Thanks. We will.
One of the headliner events at this year's festival is Jad Abumrad of the podcast Radio Lab. Jad Abumrad will give a talk on Saturday, June 25th at Liberty Hall. If you're not familiar with Radio Lab, we'll finish up the hour with an excerpt from a recent show.
Hi, I'm Robert Krulwich.
And I'm Jad Abumrad.
This is Radiolab. In this hour, we're going to examine a sense of moral justice. Everybody knows that sometimes you feel something is right, sometimes you feel something is wrong. We want to know, where does that feeling begin? Where does it come from? How old is it? We are going to take you from playgroups to prisons, some brain scans in between.
Can we get started, please?
Okay. Just going on a bit.
Since this is an hour on morality, why don't we start with two morality thought experiments? Are you with me?
Begrudgingly, yes.
This is a famous problem originally posed in 1967 by the philosopher Philip Afoot. There are two parts to this problem, and you're going to have to make a choice at the end of each one.
Each one what? I mean, you're going to tell me a story.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you a story, okay. And you're going to make a choice.
All right.
Part one. You ready?
Yeah.
All right. You're near some train tracks. Go there in your mind.
Okay.
There are five workers on the tracks working. They've got their backs turned to the trolley, which is coming in the distance.
I mean, they're repairing the tracks.
They are repairing the
tracks. This is unbeknownst to them, the trolley is approaching.
They don't see it. You can't shout to them.
Okay.
And if you do nothing, here's what'll happen. Five workers will die.
Oh, my God. That was a horrible experience. I don't want that to happen.
No, you don't, but you have a choice. You can do A, nothing, or B, it so happens next to you is a lever. Pull the lever and the trolley will jump onto some side tracks where there is only one person working.
So if the if the trolley goes on the second track, it will kill the one guy.
Yeah, so there's your choice. Do you kill one man by pulling a lever, or do you kill five men by doing nothing?
Well, I'm going to pull the lever.
Naturally. All right, here's part two. You're standing near some train tracks. Five guys are in the tracks, just as before, and there is the trolley coming.
Right. Same five guys working
on
the track.
Same five guys.
Backs to the train, they can't see anything.
Yeah, exactly. However, I'm going to make a couple changes. Now you're standing on a footbridge that passes over the tracks. You're looking down onto the tracks. There's no lever anywhere to be seen, except next to you, there is a guy.
What do you mean there's a guy?
A large guy, large individual, standing next to you on the bridge, looking down with you over the tracks, and you realize, wait, I can save those five workers if I push this man. Give him a little tap.
No.
He'll land on the tracks and
stops the train.
Right.
Oh, yeah, I'm not going to do that.
But surely you realize the math is the same.
You mean I'll save four people this way?
Yeah.
Yeah, but this time I'm pushing the guy. Are you insane? No.
All right, here's the thing. If you ask people these questions, and we did, starting with the first, is it okay to kill one man to save five using a lever? 9 out of 10 people will say...
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
But if you ask them, is it okay to kill one man to save five by pushing the guy? 9 out of 10 people will say...
No. No. Never. No.
No.
It is practically... universal.
Educational level, no effect. Male versus female, no effect.
That's Mark Hauser, a professor at Harvard. He actually posed the trolley scenarios to hundreds of thousands of people on the internet, found the same thing. Everyone agrees. Then he took it a step further and asked them why. Why is murder, because that's what it is, why is murder okay when you're pulling a lever, but not okay when you're pushing the guy? And what he found is that consistently, people have no clue.
They don't understand what drove their judgments, which were completely spontaneous and automatic and immediate. And once they kind of appreciate the dilemma they're now in of lack of consistency, the whole thing basically begins to unravel.
Pulling the lever to save the five, I don't know, that feels better than pushing the one to save the five. But I don't really know why. So that's there's a good moral quandary for you.
And if, as we said in the beginning, having a moral sense is a unique and special human quality, then maybe us two humans anyway, you and me, should at least inquire as to why this happens. And I happen to have met somebody who has a hunch. He's a young guy at Princeton University, wild curly hair, bit of mischief in his eye. His name is Josh Green.
All righty.
And he spent the last few years trying to figure out where this inconsistency comes from.
How do people make this judgment? Forget whether or not these judgments are right or wrong. Just what's going on in the brain that makes people distinguish so naturally and intuitively between these two cases, which from an actuarial point of view are very, very, very similar, if not identical.
Josh is, by the way, a philosopher and a neuroscientist, so this gives him special powers. He doesn't sort of sit back in a chair, smoke a pipe, and think, now, why do you have these differences? He says, no, I would like to look inside people's heads, because in our heads we may find clues as to where these feelings of revulsion or acceptance come from.
That's an excerpt from the popular program Radiolab. One of Radiolab's creators, Jad Abumrad, will be in Lawrence next week as part of the Free State Festival. Jad Abumrad will be at Lawrence's Liberty Hall on Saturday, June 25th. For ticket information and a complete schedule of events, their website is freestatefestival.org. By the way, you can hear Radiolab every week at noon on Saturdays on KPR2. Kansas Public Radio is proud to be a partner once again this year for the Free State Festival. I'm Kay McIntyre. Hope to see you there. KPR Presents is a production of Kansas Public Radio at the University of Kansas.